thanks for the introduction. So today we will be talking about the use of data compression in network services and about improper ways to handle it. The other authors of this work are Davide Balzarotti from Eurocom France, and Stefan Winter and Iraj Suri from TU Darmstadt, Germany. Let's get started. So modern applications rely on a number of network services that support the basic communication between software components. These services can be web services, mail services, or instant messaging services. The amount of data exchanged between services and between client services is increasing over the time. More data means more waiting time to transfer it, which means also a responsiveness of the system and unhappiness of the user. One way to solve this problem is to buy bandwidth. However, bandwidth comes with a cost. We have to pay for it. Another solution is to use data compression. Now, data compression is a coding technique which reduces the amount of bits that we need to represent a string by removing redundancies. Can be lossy, can be lossless, depending whether or not it's possible to reconstruct the original string starting from the compressed version. There are lots of algorithms. You can refer to the Book of Solomon to see how many of them exist, and to explain in the details. Amongst the most popular, we have the deflate, as specified in RFC 1951. Deflate is implemented in several libraries, including a zlib, or in tools like gzip or the zip archive tool. It's available in most of the modern programming languages. Data compression is used in communication protocols and in the network services. The idea is to reduce the size of messages. It can be mandated by protocol specification. This is the case for HTTP response messages, or for IMAP commands, XMPP messages, and so on and so forth. It can be also implemented as a feature specific to the implementation, like the compression of HTTP request messages. Now, the problem of using data compression in network services is that if it's not properly implemented, it may render the application vulnerable to resource exhaustion that can be used for denial of service attacks. The risk around supporting data compression in network services are three. First, it's an intensive task in the sense that it's computationally intensive, it eats memory and CPU, and if it's abused, it can stall the application. Second, data compression, or better, data decompression, increases the amount of data that needs to be processed by components. For example, consider that the upper bound compression rate of the zlib library is about 1 to 1024, meaning that one byte of compressed data can be decompressed to 1024 bytes. This amount of data needs to be processed. Internal components may not be designed to handle this volume of data. This can lead to exhaustion of resources and then again a denial of service attacks. Third, data compression introduces an unbalanced scenario between client and servers. This scenario is the following. Clients can pre-compute compressed messages offline and then send them all at once, for example, to the server. The server, however, has to decompress each message once they arrive. In the past, we have seen improper way to handle data compression that lead to attacks. One of these attacks is the zip bombs. Now, a zip bomb is a 42-kilobyte file, which contains five layers of nested zip files in block of 16. And in the lower layer, we have 16 files of 4.3 gigabyte each. Once decompressed, this file can occupy on the disk 4.5 petabyte of data. If the decompression of this file is improperly implemented, it can cause disk or memory exhaustion. Antivirus software were vulnerable to this type of were vulnerable to resource exhaustion, and attackers used to exploit this vulnerability by attaching zip files to emails. Related problem to the zip bomb is what is called the XML bomb attack, or the billion laughs attack. Related in the sense, this attack doesn't require the use of compression, but uses a similar behavior caused by data compression, which is data amplification. The vulnerability here affected XML parsers that basically happened when when processing XML files with nested XML entity definitions. The XML file you see in this slide is 810 bytes, and once parsed, can be expanded to 3 gigabytes of data. Now, this was 1996, 2003, which means roughly between 15 and 20 years ago. At this point, we may think that we know a bit better how to handle data compression. However, that's not the case. We reviewed protocol specification, design patterns, and coding rules, and we found out that there is a general unawareness of the risk of using data compression network services. In particular, we found out that guidelines that explain how to handle, or should explain how to handle data compression, are either missing or misleading. Let's see some example. The protocol specifications, for example, they don't describe or give any indication how to handle data compression in protocols. This applies for HTTP, XMPP, and other protocols. Few of them even redirect to the SSL TLS specification, which has other concerns like information leakage or enforcing the size of packet limits. And they do not explain how the concerns of SSL TLS can be applied to the other protocols. Secure design patterns. Design patterns are in the sense of software engineering. They try to solve issues at the earlier stages of the software development lifecycle. And for the specific case of software design patterns, they try to solve vulnerabilities. However, design patterns, they lack of the details to address the implementation level concerns. We also had a look at coding rules, and we found only one coding rule which explains how to handle data compression, and this rule is an anti-zip bomb technique. However, we found this to be incorrect. Precisely, it's vulnerable, and I will show you the vulnerability later on in this presentation. At this point, we ask ourselves how this lack of common knowledge affect implementation, real software, how this breaks down to real software. To answer this question, we had a look at network services, the source code, extensions of network services, protocol specifications, documentation of network services, and we looked specifically for ways to implement in a proper way or incorrect way data compression. We grouped our findings in 12 pitfalls. I will present you today a few of them. And plus, we tested also network services to check whether or not they can be vulnerable to resource exhaustion, and we use compression bombs for this purpose. We discovered 10 previously unknown vulnerabilities, and I will give you a preview also of these vulnerabilities soon. Now, this presentation continues as follows now. I will show you mistakes in software, pitfalls I mentioned you before, and then we will have a look at the testing phase, how we tested network services. Now, our analysis started from case studies. We selected three protocols, HTTP, XMPP, and IMAP. Then we identified 11 popular services, for example, OpenFire, Prosody, Jabber2, or Apache HTTP, Tomcat, and so on. And also 10 extensions, for example, like ModPHP for Apache, or Apache CXF. And we selected these services by using service detection of the top 1,000 domain of the Alexa database. We also relied on external resources like a list of public instant messaging services. So we had a look at specification, documentation, and the source code, and we observed 12 pitfalls, common mistakes. We grouped these pitfalls in three families, pitfalls at implementation level, specification level, and configuration level. This is the list of the pitfalls we identified. I'm not going through all of them for time constraint, but I will limit the presentation to these five. Now, to introduce the pitfalls at the implementation level, first I want you, I would like to introduce how messages are parsed in our case studies. This is message processing pipeline. Basically, messages enter on the left-hand side, and then they should exit on the right-hand side in another form. There are several units in this pipeline. There is an authentication unit, validation unit, the compressor, a parser, a logger, and then an abstract unit that we call the application. Could be the rest of the network services that gives a meaning to the message, or could be, for example, some web framework like JSON frameworks and so on. Now, the authentication unit is in charge of verifying whether the incoming message is coming from an authenticated user. The validation is deciding whether the message should be accepted or not, for example, checking at the size of the message. The decompressor is responsible to expand the message. The parser, of course, is doing what a parser is supposed to do, to decompose the message in small components and then hand it to the next unit. And then we have a logger that keep track of all exceptional behaviors. So the first pitfall is related to the use of compression and authentication. By looking at the documentation, we find out also specifications. We find out an inconsistent best practice. For example, for SSL TLS, the use of authentication before compression is mandatory. For XMPP, instead, is recommended, while for IMAP and HTTP is undefined. There are other cases, for example, for SSH, where the one implementation, the popular OpenSSH, diverged from the specification. Now, this can cause developers to underestimate or misunderstand the issue that is behind. And we found out, for example, a vulnerability in Prosody which accepted compressed messages before user authentication. This basically opened up the door to attacks, denial of service attacks to unauthenticated users. This vulnerability has been disclosed to the developers. They reacted pretty quickly and now has been fixed. The second pitfall is affecting the way an incoming message is validated. In our study, we identified three ways to accept or to validate an incoming message. The first one is to accept a message by looking at the size of the compressed form. This was the behavior implemented by Modiflate, that is the module of Apache HTTPD. Basically, there is a parameter in the configuration file of Apache called limit request body, which basically is the content length of incoming request. If the incoming message is greater than the limit request, then the message is rejected. Now, this is a vulnerable behavior because, as I said, we can compress 1 gigabyte in 1 megabyte, and accepting a message just because it's of 1 megabyte of size, it's a problem because then the real size is going to be 1 gigabyte. The second way to validate incoming message is using a concept called decompression ratio. A decompression ratio, basically, the ratio is the proportion or the ratio between the compressed data over the uncompressed data. If this, while processing the message, if this ratio is going above a certain threshold, the message is rejected. Now, this is a bit risky. It works. This is what, for example, Modiflate now is implementing. This works, but there is a problem of selecting the ratio. The system administrator need to have a range of good values. But this value doesn't quantify a resource of the system, identify some property that could depend from the deployment scenario, from the redundancy in the message, and so on. The third approach, which is the correct one, is to validate the message for the looking at the size of the decompressed form. This is actually implemented by the same Modiflate, the same one that was vulnerable in the first step, when used together with another module, that is moddav. In this case, there is another parameter that is called limit XML request body, and if the decompressed size is greater than this value, then the message is rejected. The third pitfall is this time related to communication between units. The behavior that you would like to see in this pipeline is that whenever there is an exception, and this exception is assumed that it's not possible to recover from it, we would like the pipeline to stop working, release all the resources where allocated, and reject the message. There was two cases, where ModPHP and ModGSOAP are two modules of Apache. They are able to verify it, or no, they can accept messages by looking at the size of the decompressed form. However, if this limit was reached, they had no means to stop the decompression. So basically, Modiflate was keeping on decompressing, meaning using system resources. So we reported this problem, now has been addressed and fixed. Another pitfall that we identified is related to how do we log exceptional behaviors when compressed messages are involved. Now, we know that frequency and verbosity of log events can be a cause for denial of services. And when compressed messages are involved, the resources needed to do this operation may be underestimated. For example, we found out that Apache CXF is a framework which enabled to create web services, talking, for example, in SOAP. Apache CXF, whenever receive an HTTP request which was invalid, for example, the content type didn't match the real content of the request, it wanted to log this file, and it wanted to log only the first 100 kilobytes. The problem is that this was done in this way. First, the message is stored the compressed form on disk, then it's entirely decompressed on disk, and then the first 100 kilobytes are read and put in the log file. Of course, if you are malicious enough, you can imagine already the vulnerable behavior. You just send thousands of these messages and you fill up the disk. Now, this was a vulnerability. We disclosed this and now it's fixed. Now, basically, they decompress as much as they need to reach this 100 kilobyte. And if I recall correctly, it's not anymore 100 kilobyte. They realized this was even too much. Now, this ends, there is another pitfall on the implementation level. As I said, for time constraint, I'm not going to present this one, but I will present only one related to the specification level. That this is related to the code pattern that we found vulnerable. So basically, this code pattern explains how to safely decompress zip bombs. The idea is that we have a look at the header of the zip file. There is one specific header which contains the size of the decompressed file. And we, according to the value in this file, we decide whether to go on with the decompression or reject the file. The point is that the header of zip files are not integrity protected, and an attacker can put the value he wants as long as it's smaller than the value that has been checked, that is checked by the application. Now, this code pattern is vulnerable. And the book, the cover you see in this slide, is the book that contains the vulnerable version. However, there is a fixed version now on the wiki page of the same publisher. Now we are moving to the second part of this presentation, where I discuss the test that we performed on network services. Now, we perform tests on our case studies. We install them on our local servers. We follow the black box approach. And on the left-hand side, you can see there is a server which runs the implementation that we intend to test. And inside the same server, we instrumented it in order to monitor the consumption of resources of the implementation under test by pulling from the proc file system. On the right-hand side, there are the two entities. One is called external monitor, which behaves as an honest client. It's just sending requests at regular intervals just to monitor the time interval between a request and response to see whether the system is under stress or not. And then we have attackers, which pre-computed zip bombs, or let's call them compression bombs because it's more correct. And then send them. We considered, for example, a scenario with one attacker, 12 attackers, or 24 attackers. So we couldn't do more because we had limited resources. Now, as I said, the attacker is sending zip bombs, compression bombs, sorry. And just let's see how this compression bomb was created. So we created a compression bomb for each protocol. In this slide, you can see it's a HTTP-based compression bombs which contain a SOAP message, which is massively gigantic. Basically, this is a POST request towards a resource, index.html, and the body is a SOAP message that is compressed using the gzip compression. Now, our idea was, if we take a normal SOAP request, which is this XML file, if you want to make it gigantic, the risk to create an invalid XML file is high. We can put, for example, random string inside, but the parser will fail as soon as it reads this one. So the idea was, okay, let's put something that is syntactically correct and won't invalidate the structure of the XML. So we just placed inside 4 gigabytes of space between two XML entities. Now this file, since that the 4 gigabytes of white space, the entropy is pretty low, can be compressed of about 1 to 1,000. So this 4 gigabytes of body request was compressed in 4 megabytes. So we prepared other compression bombs similar to this one. For example, we used the same trick for JSON. JSON admits spaces between comma, for example, and other symbol. And then we put inside 4 gigabytes of spaces as well. The same trick we use for XMPP, that is XML-based. While for IMAP, we just created an email with 2 gigabytes or 4 gigabytes of blank body. The compression ratio is always the same. We was 1 to 1,000. Now, we tested all the network services that were in our case study list. And we found out that there were a lot of vulnerabilities due to resource exhaustion. Now, to be fair, this type of test didn't help us to find immediately vulnerabilities in all cases. There were cases where this was clear, because you see the CPU just skyrocket, or for example, the program crashes, or the disk is filled up. For other cases, we had a look at the source code, we manually investigated on the issue, and then escalated it to the developers, which we identified if this was a real resource exhaustion or not. So all these vulnerabilities were either disclosed to them or and publicly put with a CV entry, or we just discuss on a private level with the emails. So in conclusion, in this study, we verified that after about 20 years, developers are still unaware of the risk of using data compression in network services. In our study, we found out that there are vulnerabilities out there, I mean, now are fixed, and we found 10 of them and in popular network services. And plus, in this study, we had a look at why this is happening, what is happening in the source code. We also look at what is happening at the documentation and also the configuration level, which is a part I couldn't cover today, but you can refer to the paper for this other pitfalls. So we grouped them, and we hope that these pitfalls can be used as a guidelines for developers in order to build more secure services in the future. I think this is it. Thank you very much. Questions?
So if you have questions, please come up to the mic and remember to say your name and affiliation. So I'll go first. So given the difficulty that we seem to have in using compression in network protocols, what should we do? Should we just change them and say no more compression, or is there a way that we can use this safely?
Well, I believe there is a safe way to implement it. We need to put under control all the resources that are used, and whenever there is a component that is doing some operation to somehow influence the previous component, like I showed in the pipeline, this should be done always controlling the resources and make sure that someone wants to stop the execution, this has to be done. So it's an architectural problem, is also a problem of each unit, but I think it is possible to have data compression implemented in a secure way. There are cases, for example, Modiflate and Moddav together, they offer a good implementation. Of course, we renounce to something when we have data compression. We get less data and we have more load on the CPU side, but it's part of the game. But in general, from this point of view, ignoring all the other problems like information leakage due to interference between data compression and encryption, if we ignore all of that, then it's possible to have data compression in a secure way.
Thank you. And I guess I didn't follow my own instructions.
Jian Jiang from UC Berkeley. Very interesting. I have one question about your experiments of compression bombs. I kind of missed what's the main course of main resource consumption of depressing zip bombs. It's CPU or disk or memory?
Okay, in our case studies, we find a diverse situation. There were cases where the CPU was left unbound, but no exceptional memory or CPU usage. In other cases, memory was consumed immediately. For example, two messages managed, for example, Prosody was crashing with only two messages. It filled up 8 gigabytes of memory and then was killed by the operating system. Then in another case for Apache CXF, the problem was on disk space. It was just writing on disk. Actually, what I said was just an approximation just to make the story easier. But what Apache 6F was doing was to write, to decompress the same file twice into different files without removing the previous one. So if you send a 4 gigabyte file compressed in 4 megabytes, you have 8 gigabytes of disk space used. So this, in this case, was the disk usage. So, but in general, there's not, we didn't have a single resource that was entirely used, but the, it's diverse, the situation.
The follow-up question, did you try to change the format of this raw data or just use the redundant zero or same letters?
We use only white spaces, like the space bar.
Okay,
thank you. Just 4 gigabytes of that.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Russ Fink from the Applied Physics Laboratory. Have you tested these vulnerabilities against devices with embedded web servers, for example, Soho routers or VoIP phones or things like that? And if so, what's the posture of these kinds of things that don't often get patched?
No, we haven't targeted Soho devices or embedded devices. But that's actually is a good point, because these devices operate on constrained resources, so this kind of problem are even more interesting in these cases. Now, we targeted this software because we wanted to know, to see what the problem is in the software, let's find which are the most popular one. We just used nmap, scanned the whole world, and then we got the list of the most popular one. And this is how we end up with this list. But actually, that's a good point.
So hopefully the Internet of Things community can learn from this lesson.